Coming up on today's show, we're going to start previewing this year's Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. That's coming up on Traveling with the Mouse. So welcome everybody to episode 118 for June 18th, 2018. My name is Adam Brown, and I am joined by John Martin.
Wow, we have episode 118 on June 18th of 2018.
Ooh, a lot of 18s.
I wonder what that means.
I don't know, but we'll find out together because we're talking about the 2018 Food and Wine Festival at Epcot. We will probably continue talking about this as things progress because we don't know everything that's going to be here this year, but it is getting closer, so we want to kind of get, if you guys out there are thinking of taking a trip for this, or if you have not gone during this time and are curious about Food and Wine Festival, we're going to kind of do a little bit of an overview today and then start previewing what we do know about 2018's Food and Wine Festival. And as more details come out, we will continue to update everybody on what's going on with this year's Food and Wine Festival.
Sounds good to me.
Let's get into it. So this year, the Food and Wine Festival will be 75 days from August 30th to November 12th. This is the 23rd year, I believe it is. Yeah, so, I mean, this has been going on for many, many years now. Food and Wine Festival was the original Epcot Festival, and now you hear Epcot and Festival in the same sentence. It's pretty much year-round, almost. There's a different festival at almost every season of the year now, except for summer, oddly enough. But Food and Wine Festival has slowly creeped into summer. It used to be only a fall thing that was usually, like, the end of September to the early November, late October, and it's just slowly grown over the years and expanded to now it's reached into August, the very tail end of August, and the very kind of middle now of November. So it's in that pre-holiday rush, but post-summer rush, but it's always busy now, so it doesn't really matter rush. This is one of my favorite things to go to, especially as an adult, because I love food, I love wine, I love everything about the Food and Wine Festival, and it's a lot of fun. Disney's not just about riding rides when you become a parent, it's about trying to survive, and this really helps.
Well, it becomes a little bit more about experiences, too, as you get older.
That's true.
Epcot most definitely, as an adult, became my favorite park. I mean, it was. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it as a kid too, though. But it became like my hands down obvious favorite park.
Yeah.
Sure. The older I got, I still consider it to be my favorite, just because of the mix of the technology and the future and the cultural aspects that World Showcase brings to it.
Yeah.
I like the combination of that. I was going to point out, too, though, that November the 12th being the ending date is actually kind of early compared to some of the years past. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a time, now it's been in the range of at least 8 years ago, that I was there during the Food and Wine Festival, and it was around the same time as my birthday. Now, it did end while I was still there, so it was not too many days past the November 12th deadline, which mine is November 17th. So it was not too many days past that, but it was like a week, I guess, past whatever the date is they have now. So it's almost like they just shifted it forward so that it begins really at the end of summer in a way.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to take advantage and maybe trying to increase or help boost the crowds for the Labor Day time period, because Labor Day, even the holiday itself, when compared to all the other holidays, is dead.
Yeah.
This is an attempt to boost that, perhaps.
Yeah.
Because they weren't doing it this early as little as 3 years ago, I know, because I was there the week after Labor Day and it had not started just yet.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's been fairly recent where they moved it back to start like end of August or very early September. I know the last several years it's ended the second Monday of November. Last year it happened to be November 13th, and it was the second Monday of November. So I don't know if that's just an every year thing, no matter what date that happens to fall on or not, but that's kind of how it goes.
I think it's a little earlier. I think they're trying to keep it from running too close to Thanksgiving, and they also want to run it apparently as long as possible now.
Because this this is a big draw, and they don't need a big draw for the week of Thanksgiving because it's already really a busy week that week. So they don't need Food and Wine Festival to draw the crowd. People are just going to come anyway for that week. So,
and you have a 2 month window, a little over a 2 month window here to go. So
exactly, there's a lot of time to make a trip. One thing that I will say is a nice tip. There's this kind of sweet spot of time, especially if you have like a week long, 7, 8, 9 days potentially to visit. There's a chance you could do the Halloween party, the Food and Wine Festival, and the Christmas party if you time your vacation right at the very end of October, spilling
over. If you
time
it just right,
you can get
a little bit of everything.
All three, yeah. And one thing that I've really liked is if you don't care about doing the Halloween party because the last ones are always sold out and they're always really busy, but you do want to do the Christmas parties, you can do Christmas party and Food and Wine Festival. They do slightly overlap. So this year, the first Christmas party is November 8th. The second one is on the 9th. The third one is on the 12th. So you've got three dates for the Christmas party that overlap with Food and Wine Festival. That's something to consider.
What was it I think I mentioned? This is the International Food and Wine Nightmare Before Christmas, we'll call this, which you can do.
It could be, yeah. Because, I mean, typically now the first parties are very busy because all the vloggers and news outlets are honing in on the first one just to see what's new, what's different, what hasn't changed, all that kind of stuff. So you're better doing probably the third or fourth party of every season just to have the lower crowds and whatnot.
I think now that you've mentioned this, I'm going to try and book a vacation that falls into this time period.
Yeah.
Just to see. You would have to have kind of a long stay that included the Halloween party, night Halloween party.
Exactly, yeah.
I think
you would have you'd have to book that one early. But yeah, you'd have to probably stay like 7, 8 nights to be able to be at the first Christmas party and the last Halloween party in. But
yeah,
you could do it. It's doable.
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of people do it actually.
Yeah, if they stay, long periods of time.
Or just get a room at the All-Stars or something. Or campground, for example.
Yeah.
You could easily do that.
Or if you're European and you stay 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the folks from Europe come in and stay 2 weeks. So, easily done. But, of course, back to the Food and Wine Festival. For people who may not know what this event is, or if you haven't been to this yet and you're curious, if you haven't been to any festival at Epcot, I'll start there and say you don't have to have separate admission or anything for this. It's you get into Epcot, you get into Food and Wine Festival. There's no additional charge to get into the festival. However, if you want to sample the food, everything costs, I would say, between probably like $4 and $10 average. Some dishes might be a little bit more than 10. Alcohol is, of course, going to be like 10 minimum, just about. But it depends on what it is you're getting. And then the food is going to be in that kind of, $4 to $7 range for most things. And then maybe there's a few more elaborate things that might be a little more pricey than that. But I would say that's kind of the price range you're looking at. And if you're going to do this sampling a lot of foods, you know, they recommend, and I would also recommend, buying a gift card. They sell the wristband gift cards that you can load like $50. That's usually what we do, like $50 or something like that on a wristband, maybe 100, and we'll go around and, you know, just use that gift card rather than charging your credit card over and over again, which a lot of credit cards may shut down after, you know, so many transactions. So
I was gonna say $50, I mean, I would be done in like three booths.
That's,
I think,
true. My wife and I usually both do 50 each, and then we'll just share whatever we get.
Right, yeah, I was going to say that Lynn and I have done pretty much the same thing. I mean, for the most part, I think we shared a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
However, yeah. Our tendency was to get something different and just try each other's.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do, yeah.
So,
yeah.
At each booth.
So there's, gosh, I'm trying to think. There's usually 20-plus booths. The Food and Wine Festival has by far the most food booths. Flower and Garden has quite a few as well, but it's not nearly as many. So literally, like, everywhere you go, there are going to be booths.
Flower and Garden just recently started doing food.
Yeah. Yeah, in the last several years, yeah. It hasn't always had it, but of course they realized how popular Food and Wine Festival is. Let's throw some food in here and continue to make money. Exactly. And continue to make money. Is there a strategy you usually have which direction you go? Do you go in any direction, or you just sort of wander around and find what you find?
I mean, I've kind of wandered, truthfully. I mean, you know, the first one you come to, if you see something that strikes your fancy, you get it, or you get in line, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I've always done it.
And so, you know, Epcot already has the countries that are there, which all have their own booth. But in between them, there's other countries that don't have their own pavilion at Epcot that have stuff. And then there's some that aren't really affiliated with a country necessarily. It's more of like a type of cuisine or something that they're focusing on. Because I think recently they had the Light Lab was one that, you know, just had some unique drinks. There's like a actual wine and cheese one that was off to the side between like Imagination and the World Showcase area. So there's stuff everywhere, and then there's food demonstrations and things. Now, in the past, this was at the Wonders of Life Pavilion. They would have, it was basically the festival center, but who knows, are they going to do this for this year? We don't know, because they did not have a festival center for Flower and Garden this year, so we don't know what's going to happen. But in the past, there's been chefs that would demonstrate things in there, and merchandise, and they had the Ghirardelli chocolate, like they would have chocolate art and stuff in there.
In my opinion, No, it's not going to be here. They're going to shift the things they had there to the Odyssey.
That's exactly what I was
saying. My opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right there. They already did it kind of for Festival of the Arts. That's where they had some demonstrations there and some merchandise. So last year, I think for Food and Wine, it was a brewery sample place. So they basically made it into a food booth, and then they had some merchandise in there. So I think you're right. That's probably what's going to happen.
Just based on everything that's going on over there, there is definitely something attraction-based or entertainment-based that is going to be going into the Wonders of Life Pavilion. We just don't know what it is yet. So that is, I feel 99.9% certain that that is out as far as a Food and Wine Festival event center or what have you.
Yeah. So let's see, other things they have, you know, the Eat to the Beat concert series, which very similar to Flower and Garden as well, where they have Garden Rocks concert series.
And the lineup over the years has changed marginally.
Yeah. Some older bands and musicians who were name recognition but haven't been around for a while or haven't been like kind of mainstream for a while, and then there's some that are never really hit it super big, but they're known and that kind of thing. So it's a mixture of old and new. And
yeah, bands who had their most notable hits in the late 90s, like Vertical Horizon, late 90s, yeah, early 2000s.
Exactly. Plain White Tees. One that I know is like always there, Sugar Ray. He's been there for like the last like 5 or 6 years, minimum. He's probably been there longer than that.
Another late 90s, early 2000s.
Exactly. And usually they do, what, like about a 30-minute set, I think. That's kind of what it seems like for me. I have not sat through a whole one that I can think of, but I have watched a few of these. The show times are each night, they're 5:30, 6:45, and 8 p.m. So they do probably about a 30-minute set, typically, more than likely.
So, and to give you a list of the ones that are brand new to it this year, you may have actually heard some of these names in other series they've had before, but Mercy Me, Glass Tiger, Tarn Wells, Vertical Horizon, as I just mentioned, Sheila E., Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts, 98 Degrees,
oh, wow,
and High Valley.
Interesting.
Those artists are the new ones.
Interesting, 98 Degrees. I didn't know they were back together.
What's more fitting in Florida than a band named 98 Degrees?
Right, well, because it probably will be, even if it's November. Because when we went in November, it was still like 90 degrees. But that's not typical, I will say that. I mean, you can get cooler days in November. It's just, you just never know what you're going to get in Florida. New things for the family. There's a new playground, which my guess is it's going to be the same one that was at Flower and Garden this year, which is in that same general area I was mentioning earlier, on the pathway between Royal Showcase and the side that Journey to Imagination's on, that pathway. There was a playground there for Flower and Garden. I'm guessing that that's going to be the same for Food and Wine Festival. It's going to be themed differently, but that's always nice because I think the wine bar is right next to it. So if you're parents,
well, that's, you know, fitting.
Let the kids play while you enjoy some wine and cheese. But this is new, the character dance party. It says on Friday and Saturday evenings, kids will enjoy interactive atmosphere where they can dance and play along with Disney characters. I'm not exactly sure where that would be located, but that's something new because I've not seen that at Food and Wine Festival before. Junior Chef Kitchen presented by Krusty's. What is Krusty's?
You know, like anyway, the Krusty's sandwich stuff.
Oh, okay.
For the kids.
Oh, okay. Anyway, kids stuff. Children become chefs where they get to eat what they make in this family-friendly, complimentary experience every Sunday. So at the Festival Center. Interesting. So probably, like you said, the Odyssey, which is kind of cool.
Oh, I'm almost positive, like I said, so.
And this is something that's returning, but it's obviously going to be in different locations. But it's called Remy's Ratatouille Hide and Squeak Scavenger Hunt, which last year I remember seeing this. Basically, there's little Remy's hidden throughout the World Showcase area, and you can purchase a map where you can put stickers on the locations where you found him, or I think it depends on how they do it this year, but it's similar to the Flower and Garden Festival. They did the one with the bee where you had to find him throughout World Showcase at different locations, and you get a prize at the end of it if you find them all. We actually did the Easter one because we actually happened to be there before Easter, and anyway. So it's very similar to that. It's good for the kids. Again, the adults can be enjoying the food, the kids can be looking for Remy, so something for the kids to do.
You know, it's interesting, it says new Festival Center offerings here, and under new marketplaces, the description says discover a brand new mimosa bar, wine and local beers, select food options and complimentary samples and seminars hosted by Joffrey's Coffee and Tea Company.
Hmm.
You know, it's funny that Joffrey's Coffee and Tea is hosting this thing that's mimosa bar and wine and local beers and such.
Yeah.
Instead of coffee and tea.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe they're expanding kind of their offerings.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Of course, there's their merchandise, which is not really that new of an offering, I don't think, unless they do something different with it than I'm accustomed seeing. So
every year they're going to have the year on, you know, shirts or mugs or hats or wine glasses, that kind of thing. They'll have the year printed on it. So, you know, if you want to get your 2018 Food Wine Festival shirt, hat, shot glasses, wine glasses, whatever, you'll have it there. So
I see here on the Sunday brunch with the chef, I would like to be there whenever Tiffany Thiessen is there.
Oh, really? She's a chef now? That's interesting.
Apparently so.
Let's read this list out of chefs, because there are several in here I know. A couple that would be interesting to see. And yes, they're all TV personalities. So, Jamie Dean is Paula Dean's son. Richard Blaze, I'm not sure who that is. Tiffany Thiessen, I didn't know she had a cooking show or is a chef now. That's interesting. But yeah, I'm sure that will be a very popular one. Morimoto, he's, you know, the Morimoto Asia in Disney Springs. I don't know who Buddy Velastro is. Art Smith, of course, Art Smith's Homecoming. And Jeffrey Zakarian, I know he's on Food Network. Alex Garnaschelli, she's also Food Network. Carla Hall, I don't know who that is, but I'm sure somebody out there does. So there's some interesting names. I would pick Jeffrey Zakarian because I've always thought he was interesting.
Isn't Jeffrey Zakarian and Alex Garnaschelli two that are commonly in...
Chopped?
Yeah, Chopped.
Hmm.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they're judges a lot on Chopped.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. My wife and I enjoy watching that show. I mean, we don't watch it religiously or anything, but
yeah,
we watch it whenever we get an opportunity, if we just find it and we happen to be sitting in front of the television at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But interesting that they have personalities that include two chefs that have restaurants on property, but
yeah.
I bet they were really difficult to get.
Right, exactly. This is in your contract. You want your restaurant to stay open? You got to show up. So the cost is $129 per guest and runs from 11:30 to 1:30. That's, wow. So, well, I mean, it's decent for a meal, I guess.
What you get, don't get me wrong, it's not something you could just, you know, anybody could do anytime they wanted, I'm sure.
So I don't know what I would do. Like, if it was, there's one celebrity chef that I would definitely pay this for, but he's not on the list, so let's see. I like being kind of in the back of World Showcase through, like, Japan, Morocco, American Adventure, Germany, yeah, going Italy. I like that area of Food Wine Festival, for one, because it's not always as crowded back there as it is in the front, because around Mexico and Canada, everybody is just sort of there. It's just always really, really busy around there. And even walking through China,
yeah,
that area is always busy.
I was about to say, this is the section where you find the quitters. Because they just, like, go to one side or the other, or they get a few things, and they're like, oh, we're done.
Yeah.
This is where the quitters hover.
Exactly, yeah. You're right. It tends to just be hovering people back. They're just going back and forth. But if you can make it all the way to the back, that's where... It's not going to be as bad, I would think. On really busy days, it probably will be, but especially first thing, World Showcase opens at 11 a.m. If you just go straight to the back, you're going to be able to walk through and get pretty much whatever you want right away and have fairly short lines. I would say, though, last year it wasn't that bad. In October, I think we went, it wasn't bad at all. And one thing I will say, too, is once you get your food, their appetizer-like portions, you kind of have to hunt for a table sometimes. They've gotten better about adding more tables each year. They seem to have more and more places to sit. There's an area, I know there are certain areas where they set up tables where they're not normally anything, and they actually have sit-down tables. But most of the time, it's these round sort of stand-up tables with no chairs anywhere near, because people would steal the chairs and run off with them everywhere. So they have these stand-up tables where you can go and just sort of stand there and eat your food and enjoy it while, and of course, take pictures and put it on Instagram, because that's what everybody does. So you have that opportunity. In the old days, like when I first started doing Food and Wine Festival, you pretty much would have to find a trash can to lean up against and put your food on, because they didn't have enough tables. But thankfully, they've rectified that, and they've added a lot more tables. Have you had trouble finding a table lately, or when you've done it?
No, I mean, the truth be told, I've kind of, the last couple of times outside of, gosh, maybe the early part of the 2010s, I have been one of those quitters, so to speak, just because of the reason I guess I was there was more not for the festival itself, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it was to do a few things at the festival, and that be it. So it was a bit of a challenge, depending on what area you were in, for sure.
Yeah.
Canada's hard spot where that booth is.
Yeah.
I think we got something from a couple of the booths that are in that general area and ended up like sitting on the curb where there was some shade from the umbrella.
Right.
Of a table close by, you know, yeah. to enjoy some of the things there. Right. Or I ended up sitting my plate or drink on top of a trash can.
Yep.
At some point.
That's what you had to do sometimes.
You know, yeah. Things like that.
I said earlier, my wife and I usually will both get a gift card with a certain amount on it. What we tend to do is when we get to an area where we know we're going to get something, we'll decide, like, okay, you get this one, and I'll go get a table and sort of quarantine a table. And while she's going to get the whatever it is, I'll be getting a table and holding it so that when she's done, she walks over and she'll hold the table, and I'll go get something and bring it back to that table, too. And that's kind of how we do it. You got to divide and conquer a little bit. But it's easier to find one that way. Know the area you want to stick around for a while and do it that way. I'm trying to think. I was going to mention, if I could think of them, some of my favorite things, but I probably will confuse that with some of the Flower and Garden or other festivals that have food.
Well, if you're talking about stuff you've actually eaten, yeah, you're never going to, unless you have one of those booklets filled out right, in front of you. It's going to be difficult.
I have a booklet somewhere, but yeah, I don't remember.
I actually do have a couple that Lynn and I, we got them. They're nowhere near full by any means, from 2013, which was when we were on a honeymoon. I actually do have one from that one.
Yeah.
Still.
I will say really quickly, there are some staples where they'll have the same stuff every year. And then there's a few that they'll, you know, have new things here and there, and then there's always going to be a few brand new booths or setups every year, but there will be some that stay the same pretty much every year. So,
just to give you an example of what was new from 2013, I was trying to look at the ones that we actually had stamps on. Like, it appears we tried some things from what was new this year, at that year, and it has it marked in here as new, was a Scotland booth. And the one thing we have marked or checked on this list was a Scottish Banoffee tart with bananas, Scotch whiskey toffee, Walker shortbread crumbles and sweet cream. So we did the sweeter side at that one.
Yeah, it's
always and we got good. Our stamp on it. In Hawaii, we actually just got a beverage there, the Alani Sunrise.
Cool.
Although they did have the pork slider with sweet and sour dole, pineapple, chutney, and spicy mayonnaise. So that was something that was available. We did Greece. Griddled Greek cheese with pistachios and honey was the item that we got there. So we just kind of, you know, went randomly. I noticed in Canada, we each had something from there. We had the cheddar cheese soup, and that was when I was talking about. I had the Le Cellier wild mushroom beef filet mignon with truffle butter sauce, which was really good.
Cool.
And apparently the La Fosse Neige apple ice wine and the Moosehead lager. You know, things just like that. I mean, that we had looking through here. I was just looking at the ones we did, Mark. So we just did a couple of booths pretty much this year and moved on. You know, they have new menu items even at some booths that have been there. Brazil is one of those that, you know, they're talking about a pavilion or have talked about in recent years that they've always had a booth there, or they've regularly had a booth there, stuff like that.
I know one that I always like to get is at the Belgium booth, which has a lot of different waffles, but the one that I liked the most was the potato leek waffle with braised beef on top. That was always one of my favorites.
Is it always, does Belgian always have a booth?
It's been there for the last several years, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually in this one as well.
They probably still had the potato leek waffle there too that year.
Yes, it did. Potato and leek waffle with braised beef.
Yeah, that's delicious. I get that every year. That's one that I know every time I'll go back and get. And I've actually made it at home too. It's good. Another one that I think it was new last year, I mentioned, I think, on the show before, and I've mentioned that I love the Schafferhofer grapefruit beer, but they also have last year they had the pomegranate Schafferhofer, which was really good. And that was, I think it was just at the like craft beer place that is usually right beside Germany. So there's always different types of booths and different types of things. I would say most of the food booths have some sort of appetizer-sized entree. They'll have a couple of those. They'll have at least one dessert, and then they'll have three or four beverage options, non-alcoholic and alcoholic. And then some booths are just straight drinks of some sort, or some may just be food-related or dessert-related, that kind of thing. Definitely get a booklet that John's talking about that he has. They'll give those to you when you get in the area. You can find them at just about every register. So you can get a booklet, and you don't have to pay for those. And you get the stamps. You can have them stamped, but that's kind of silly to do. But it's really just mark with your pen or pencil or something that you may have to check off the ones that you love, to remember them, because you will taste so much food that you probably don't remember everything and remember if you like this one better than the other or whatever. But
yeah, it's a good way to document like your experience that you've had there, even to bring back some cases to compare with maybe what they had or what they have that's the same, which we just mentioned. There's an item that Adam likes in particular on the Belgian menu that was there 5 years ago.
Yeah, so, and I'm pretty sure it will be there 5 years from now, because it's one of those that's there all the time.
Well, if I could, I'm going to try and do this quickly, but
yeah,
we didn't mention like the new food to discover.
Okay. Yeah.
So they have, since they only have three booths that are really new so far this year as far as the offerings, there's a Hops and Barley Marketplace, and then the Wine and Dine Studio, and Flavors from Fire. These are the only three things that have announced thus far. They've announced an item for each of these. The Hops and Barley Marketplace has a new Brunswick slider, which is slow-braised beef brisket pot roast style with horseradish cream, crispy fried onions on a potato roll with pickled vegetables on the side. I don't expect that to be a very big portion, quite frankly, just from looking at it, but it should be interesting.
Yeah.
Butternut squash ravioli with brown butter vinaigrette, parmesan cheese, and pumpkin seeds is the one at the Wine Dine Studio.
Yeah.
And at Flavors from Fire, there is charred chimichurri skirt steak, smoked corn cake with pickled vegetable slaw and cilantro.
Yum.
So that's the newer or the new food that has been released so far this year. The closer we get to the Food and Wine Festival, there will be more stuff. We'll try to talk about that the next episode we have regarding Food and Wine Festival. So
yeah, so I'm excited about it. So if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, or ideas about this subject, you can email those to us, podcast@travelingwiththemouse.com, or you can go to our website, travelingwiththemouse.com. Let us know your thoughts about Food and Wine Festival. You can also, if you want to help support the show, you can do that on Patreon, patreon.com/TWTM podcast. Where else can we be found?
On social media, we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at TWTM Podcast. And we have a Spreadshirt store where you can get your exclusive Traveling with the Mouse merchandise. That is shop.spreadshirt.com/TWTM Podcast.
So for John Martin, my name is Adam Brown, and we will see you at the Food and Wine Festival.